This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Welcome back as we continue to try and break down an understanding of what the hell it actually was that Chad and Lori Daybell were believing. This is a fourth part in our series. If you're just jumping in on this one, I highly suggest going back to part one, then two, then three, and going chronologically through it so you get a full grasp of what the hell it is they were believing, because it all works together. Okay. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of these stories and updates on this case, because we're going to be covering, of course, Lori's upcoming trial in great detail. And if you're on YouTube, do it as well. Press subscribe there, because we are covering this stuff all the time. We put out tons of videos every single day. If you're interested in this topic, hit subscribe. You will not regret it. So let's go into our last and final chapter, trying to piece together the madness that is Chad and Lori Vallow Daybell. For Chad and Lori, reality was the enemy. As long as they could control the narrative, as long as they surrounded themselves with believers, as long as they avoided looking too closely at the trail of destruction that they had left behind, their vision of the world stayed intact. But reality doesn't wait forever. And when it finally came for them, their entire belief system collapsed like a house of cards. It started with the biggest problem of all in July of 2020. For years, Chad had spoken about the date with certainty, the end of the world. It was the moment everything would change, the moment the world would be transformed, the moment the righteous would rise and the wicked would be cast down and everyone would go to Rexburg. Yes, that's literally part of it. You would go to Rexburg, and that's where you were going to be saved. That's where everything was going to be great. Him and Lori, king and queen. Yeah. And then nothing happened. And nobody went to Rexburg. The world kept turning. Society did not collapse. There was no apocalyptic firestorm, no second coming, no divine confirmation that Chad had been right all along. And while most failed doomsday prophets just quietly revise their timeline and move on, Chad had a bigger problem. He and Lori were already being hunted. Yes, hunted. The disappearances, the deaths, the bizarre behavior, it all piled up. Law enforcement had started pulling at loose ends. And the deeper they dug, the more it became clear that Chad and Lori weren't just harmless religious fanatics. They were something far worse. They were serial killers. The media caught on next. What started as local reports about missing children turned into national headlines. Reporters were digging into Lori's past, her marriages, the people in her life, who had turned up dead. Every time a new piece of information surfaced, the story became more horrifying. But Lori didn't seem to care. It's like a honey badger. Lori don't care. She walked through all of it like nothing was wrong, smiling, laughing, sunbathing in Hawaii. While the world demanded to know where her children were. Even when police were circling closer, she acted like she had already won. The kind of confidence only works when the walls close in completely. In February of 2020, Lori was arrested in Hawaii. The charge, desertion and non-support of her children. And she refused to tell anyone where Tylee and JJ were. She sat in jail, smirking, confident that she was untouchable. She knew better. She knew more than these silly police officers. And then in June of 2020, investigators found the graves in Chad's backyard. Two small bodies, shallow graves. Proof that Chad and Lori's so-called divine mission was nothing more than a brutal, horrific lie that came along with a lot of insurance money. Chad was arrested the same day the bodies were found, and just like that, his prophecies, his godlike status, his entire delusion was shattered. Because a true prophet doesn't end up in an orange jumpsuit chained to a courtroom chair. Or does he? The goddess doesn't rot in jail waiting for a trial. Or does she? In the minds of Chad and Lori, it was just their path. A path that they were going to be persecuted for. The moment they were in handcuffs, they were no longer untouchable. The same people who had once worshipped them, who had believed their every word, started having second thoughts and turning away. Because the kid's dying and the spouse is dying, that wasn't enough. It took the police intervention for them to go, maybe they weren't who they said they were. And for the first time in years, they were no longer in control. Reality had won. And Chad and Lori had nowhere left to run. Courtrooms aren't built for gods. Chad and Lori had spent years believing they were untouchable, divinely chosen, above human law. But when the trial began, it became clear they weren't special anymore. They were defendants. And in a court of law, there were no portals, no visions, no spirit rankings to save them. There were only facts, cold, brutal, undeniable facts. The prosecution didn't need to spin a theory. They didn't need to convince anyone that Chad and Lori were fanatics. They had evidence. They had text messages between Chad and Lori, casually discussing their plans as if they were picking out new furniture instead of deciding who needed to die. They had financial records showing how Lori had immediately tried to cash in on Charles Vallow's life insurance, only to realize too late that she wasn't the beneficiary. She had witnessed testimonies from people who had once trusted Charles and Lori, people who had believed in their so-called spiritual gifts, until the bodies started piling up, one after another. Former followers took the stand. Some of them still looked shaken, as if they were only just realizing how deeply they had fallen into the delusion. I think some still thought that they were who they said they were. In fact, some even testified to it, that Chad had these prophetic images, that he had these divine moments, and that couldn't be denied. They spoke about how Chad had ranked people's souls, decided who was light and who was dark, how Lori had talked about her children's death like they were preordained, not a crime, not a tragedy, just, you know, part of the plan. And then there were the zombie doctrine pieces laid bare for the jury. Jurors listened as witnesses described how Chad and Lori truly believed that a person's soul could be ejected from their body and replaced by a dark entity. It was the perfect justification. If someone was no longer truly themselves, then their body meant nothing. But in court, stripped of its spiritual grandeur, the belief sounded exactly like what it was: delusional, insane, and deeply horrifyingly convenient. Lori's defense team tried to paint her as mentally unfit, detached from reality. And for a while it worked. She was declared incompetent to stand trial, sent for mental health treatment. But after months of evaluations, the conclusion was pretty clear. She wasn't legally insane. She wasn't suffering from a psychotic break. She knew what she was doing all along. And that meant she could be held accountable. The jury saw through the religious facade. Although I don't know if Lori saw through her own religious facade. I think she believes it. They saw beyond the talk of prophecies and divine missions on a "we're dealing with reality on reality's terms" type of thing. They saw what was really there: two people who had built an entire belief system around their own desires, their own egos, their own willingness to eliminate anyone who got in their way. And when the verdict came down, it was final. Lori Vallow, guilty on all counts. Chad Daybell, awaiting trial at the time, but the evidence against him was undeniable. The so-called prophet and goddess were nothing more than convicted murderers sentenced to life and sentenced to live the rest of their lives exactly as what they were: ordinary criminals stripped of their illusions, stripped of their power, and most painfully of all, stripped of their audience. Because the one thing about gods is they only exist as long as people believe in them. Although, wouldn't you like to know what's going on behind bars? Wonder what's going on there. Wonder if there's a little following going on there. By the time the trial ended, no one believed in Chad and Lori anymore. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints doesn't like headlines like this. It looks icky. They don't like seeing their faith tangled up in words like doomsday, cult, and murder. They don't like that every time Chad and Lori's names are mentioned, so is Mormonism. And they really don't like that for people on the outside looking in, it's not always easy to tell where mainstream LDS beliefs end and Chad and Lori's twisted doctrine begins. But the church has made one thing very, very clear. Chad and Lori were never following LDS teachings. Not even close. In the eyes of mainstream Mormonism, Chad and Lori weren't prophets. They weren't special beings sent by God. They weren't even misguided members who took things a little bit too far. They were heretics. Everything they built, the visions, the reincarnation claims, the spiritual rankings, the zombie doctrine, none of it had a place in official LDS doctrine. The church's teachings are actually pretty straightforward on most of these points. Reincarnation? Absolutely not. Mormon doctrine teaches that you get one mortal life, not multiple chances. Okay? Secret spiritual rankings? Not a thing. No one in LDS theology gets to decide who is spiritually superior to anyone else. Personal revelation? Yes, but not like this. The church teaches that God can speak to individuals, but only for their own lives, not for the fate of others, not for doctrine, and definitely not as a justification for murder. See, Mormonism, that's where you got a problem, because you let people walk up to that one, and they get suddenly convinced that, well, God said he had more things to tell me about. So who are you to say that it's God? If he wants to tell me more, he can tell me more. And if he tells me I'm a God, then I must be a God. It's not schizophrenia or grandiose narcissism or psychotic behavior or anything like that. No, it must be God. You can't walk people to that line. That's where they get off. That's where there is the breaking point. That's where you get the fundamental LDS out of it, because you walk up to that line with normal LDS. And you know what? People don't like to follow rules. They like to break them. They like to think they know better. And that's how you get this. None of that mattered to Chad and Lori. They weren't interested in the official doctrine. They wanted power. They found a way to twist the language and structure of the religion they grew up in to serve that purpose. And the LDS Church is still dealing with the fallout, because when a story like this explodes, when two self-proclaimed Mormon prophets go on a killing spree in the name of God, the public doesn't always stop to separate the mainstream from the fringe. To outsiders, they all look at it as the same. And the church knows that, so they've distanced themselves hard. They publicly stated that Chad and Lori's teachings had no basis in their LDS beliefs, that their ideas were distortions of the gospel and not part of their faith in any way. But here's the problem. Chad and Lori weren't the first fringe extremists to spin LDS doctrine into something dark. And they won't be the last. For decades, radical offshoots of Mormonism have popped up, pulling pieces of their faith and twisting them into something unrecognizable. It's happened with polygamous fundamentalist groups. It's happened with self-declared prophets who claim they've received new revelations. And it's happened with apocalyptic movements that push the idea that the world is ending now, not in some distant future, but in a way that requires immediate, drastic action. The church has spent years trying to keep these splinter groups at arm's length. But that's easier said than done. When the core religion is built on personal revelation, prophecy, and the idea that God still speaks today. So the church has started pulling back harder. Local leaders are being told to watch for members who start going too deep into the end time speculation, who start listening to self-proclaimed prophets instead of church authorities. Warnings are being given in Sunday meetings, at LDS conferences, in leadership councils. Don't fall for fringe teachings. Just fall for our fringe teachings, because ours are right. Don't let speculation about the second coming take over your faith. Just our speculation on second coming and all that. If a direct response to cases like Chad and Lori need some pushback, you wonder how many others are out there that need more pushback. Because the church knows that for every high-profile case like this, there are smaller, quieter versions of this happening all the time. Maybe not with murder, maybe not with cult-like rituals, but with members who start following their own self-described prophecies and believe that they're their own self-declared prophets, who start believing that they've been given special knowledge, who start stepping outside the mainstream in ways that can spiral into something dangerous. The LDS Church wants to shut that down, because the last thing they want is another Chad and Lori. Another case that puts Mormonism on trial along with its criminals. Another reminder that it's much as they try to stamp out extremism, it keeps finding its way back in. And they know that no matter how many times they say, this isn't us, the world will always be watching and waiting for the next one. Like I said, Chad and Lori Daybell weren't the first people to claim they had definitive divine knowledge. They weren't the first to say the world was ending, that they were chosen to lead the righteous, that God had given them special powers. And they won't be the last. History is full of people like them, self-declared prophets, doomsday preachers, charismatic leaders who convince others that they alone hold the truth. Sometimes it ends in a fraud conviction. Sometimes it ends in mass suicide. And sometimes it ends exactly like this, with innocent people dead because someone convinced themselves of their own desires and that their own desires were the will of God. And that's what makes stories like this so terrifying. It's easy to look at Chad and Lori and think, that could never happen to me. I would never fall for something like that. But the truth is, no one joins a doomsday cult on day one. No one wakes up and decides, you know what? I am going to kill my family because someone told me they were possessed by demons. It starts with small steps. A new spiritual idea. A prophecy that feels eerily relevant. A leader who seems to have insight that others just don't. And then slowly, the rules start to shift. The new interpretations of Scripture, the new revelations, new ways to look at the world start to pop up. Us versus them, light versus dark, good versus evil. And by the time someone realizes how far in they've gone, it's too late. That's why it's not enough to ignore fringe religious groups and hope they fizzle out. They have to be examined, scrutinized, taken seriously before they escalate. Because the warning signs were there. Chad wasn't subtle about his beliefs. He wrote books about them. He spoke at conferences. He built an entire audience around the idea that he had secret knowledge about the end of the world. And Lori wasn't hiding her transformation either. She told people she was a goddess. She told her friends and family that certain people were no longer really themselves, that their bodies were just empty shells waiting to be discarded. And yet no one stopped them in time. Not because people didn't see it happening, but because it's hard to step in when belief is involved. That's the tricky part about religious extremism. You can't always tell the difference between deep faith and dangerous delusion until it's too late, even though most of the time they're one and the same. By the time the red flags are obvious, people are already dead. That's why the most important thing we can do as a society, as individuals, as people who don't want to see this happen again, is to pay attention. Watch for the signs. Beware of charismatic leaders who claim they have the only real truth. Or just stay away from them altogether. Question apocalyptic predictions that demand blind obedience. Question them. Because they're bullshit. Push back against anyone who starts dividing the world into chosen and lost, who claim certain people are beyond saving. I shouldn't have to say these things out loud, but I guess some people need to hear them. Because once that line is crossed, once people start believing that certain lives don't matter anymore, it's only a matter of time before someone acts on it. Chad and Lori weren't unique. Their story was just another variation of an old dangerous pattern. And if we don't learn from it, if we don't recognize how these things start and stop giving a pass to extreme beliefs, as, oh, it's just their faith, they can do whatever they want, even though you're affecting children and the lives of other people in a very detrimental, mentally abusive way, and then physically abusive, and then murder. These folks are going to keep doing this sort of stuff. If you don't recognize how these things spiral out of control, before they spiral out of control, another Chad, another Lori, another trial of bodies left behind of people who convinced themselves that killing was holy. It will happen again. Because it always does. Hope you like this deep insight and deep look into what made Chad and Lori Daybell's belief system what it was. I hope it gave you a little more perspective on a very, very twisted way of thinking, but also how it operates and how an unhealthy brain is capable of going along with it. If you like the show, you want to see more of this and all of the content we put out, be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts and on YouTube. Press subscribe there. Click the bell so you don't miss any of our updates there. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for joining us.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. She was the perfect wife, always smiling, always supportive. A pillar of the community, beloved by friends, adored by family, and secretly researching undetectable poisons in her spare time. Maybe it was the way he chewed. Maybe she just got bored. Or maybe, just maybe, she had been planning this since the honeymoon. But if he had just paid attention, if he had just known what to look for, if he had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and learned the red flags, he could have heard every episode of Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Ad-free, and before everyone else, he could have seen it coming. Instead, he's 6 feet under, and she's shopping for husband number two. Don't be like him. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.